Now, the headlines have been dominated by talk of COVID vaccines for the last few weeks. Currently 13 that are being trialled around the world. Firstly, the German company Pfizer said there was a 90% effective number there. And the British government confirmed that it's got 40 million doses on order. And now the US company Moderna, that we found out a couple of days ago, say their vaccine trialled on 30,000 people in the US is 95% effective in the UK, and the UK has 5 million doses of that on order. So where are we with it? Dr. Nick Beeching is senior lecturer in clinical infectious diseases from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine is with us now. Dr. Nick, morning to you. Thanks for being with
us.
Another day, another vaccine, it seems. 90%, 95%, the next one that comes along, will that be 97%, then 98%? It's almost like a real good, healthy competition, this. It feels that way.
It's fantastic news. I think the last couple of times I've been on this programme, I felt like Dr. Doom and Gloom. But at the moment, we're all really excited about this. You know, two vaccines with apparent effectiveness more than 90% is fantastic. And we rather hope we'll get similar results from the other ones that are coming through on trial.
Yeah.
Just to put it in perspective, the flu jab, which is not marvellous, is about 60 to 70%.
Really?
And this is much better. It's much more like the vaccines you have for things like measles in childhood and so on.
It's easy for us as members of the public to go, oh, there's vaccine coming, great, I'll get a jab, I'll be able to go and get my old life back. You know, if I get a jab in January or February, great, I can go out and get back to my old life. It doesn't quite work like that, does it?
No, unfortunately, reality always intrudes a bit. But I think just the fact that these are in the pipeline is great. We haven't seen all of the scientific data yet, and we haven't seen the safety data, which is absolutely crucial because, nobody wants to put out a vaccine that's unsafe. And I think just to reassure everybody out there, these vaccines won't be released until we're sure of the safety. And we just have to be patient for another month or two to get those data solidly in.
I mean, the authority, you know, the companies who develop these, you know, with the great skill of many people and governments as well, we wouldn't have an announcement of 90% or 95% if the government and these organisations were not really confident that they were safe. But obviously they can't say that at the moment. That's the feeling I get from what I've read and from what I've listened to. It's erring on the side of caution, but it's good news.
That's right. So all of these trials are monitored not only by the companies that make them, but by independent monitors, and that's really important. And it's done, to start with, it's done in a blinded fashion. Nobody knows who's had the vaccine, nobody's who's had the dummy. But everything is assessed and watched by independent people. And then, of course, when all the data are in, all of that, those data are presented to the licensing authorities in the UK or in Europe or wherever. So for the vaccines you were talking about, they're all going through that process. Some of the other ones from China and Russia, which seem to be pretty effective, have been released a bit early, which has been criticised, but they are being used in other countries.
Just to take you back to the flu vaccine you mentioned before, I heard something about the measles vaccine as well. That was in between 80 and 85%. But when you mentioned the flu is 60 to 70%, it really does put it into perspective, really, you know, how well and how incredibly fast, you know, that organisations, including yours, have worked together to get us to this stage. I mean, this is totally unheard of.
It's wonderful, and it's great that Liverpool is part of that. I mean, we're not making those particular vaccines, but as you know, we've been recruiting for several vaccine studies and still are, and a lot of people in Liverpool have contributed to that, which is fabulous. Not just the School of Tropical Medicine, the university, and the hospitals, but also a lot of people across Merseyside.
Yeah. So here in Liverpool, across Merseyside, as you say, scientists, researchers, everybody else, as we're having a conversation now at 8:10 in the morning, they're working on the vaccines. They're working on different trials.
Absolutely. Yeah. So coming back to your original question, though, I think we'll be lucky if some of these are released around December, January, but you can imagine the scale of trying to immunise literally millions of people, especially if they need two doses of vaccine, because some of these will need a dose and then a dose a month apart. So the world isn't going to completely open up in January, but we can be optimistic that in the near future, provided the safety data are okay,
yeah.
That we can think about starting getting back to a normal life.
And we need to, clearly we need to prioritise, don't we? You know, there's the age factor that comes into it. There's the vulnerability of people who have underlying health conditions too. So this can't be a lottery. This has to be done in the right way, and it's got to be given to the right demographic at the right time.
Absolutely. It'll obviously be given to the highest risk people first, and then hopefully rolled out to everybody else as it becomes available. And the British government actually has done well. You mentioned that they've got advance purchase orders for the Pfizer one and the Moderna vaccine, but they've also placed quite large advance orders for several other vaccines. So Britain has hedged its bets, and I think hopefully we'll be quite well off as a result of that.
Can I just talk briefly about these conspiracy theories about what's in these vaccines? What are the concerns that some people have? And I'll just talk about maybe 13 or 14 years ago with the measles vaccine as well. And there was a lot of concern about information that was released to the general public that turned out to be false. But a lot of mums said, well, I'm not going to get my baby jab for the measles. I've read about this vaccine. And it was completely blown out of the water, this. It was just pure fabrication. But the knock-on effects of those children not having that vaccine, we're kind of seeing that today.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen several cycles of this through my professional lifetime, really. We had the same thing with whooping cough about 40 years ago. And I was looking after a children's ward at the time, and we just had a ward full of kids with serious whooping cough and damaged lungs for life. Recently, not that many years ago, we had something like 60 admissions of adults with measles in Liverpool in our hospital, and only about two of them had had any vaccinations at all. So there's no question that vaccination helps. I have seen nothing to support any of the conspiracy theories. It just doesn't make any scientific sense, the sort of wild theories about 5G being linked with it and people being microchipped. It's just complete nonsense. And a lot of it comes from bots when you come back to it. There's no basis in fact at all.
Social media doesn't. I mean, social media can be a wonderful thing and it can do great things, but it can do massive damage as well. You know, when somebody posts, you know, I've got a friend of a friend of a friend who's, and this has happened to them, and they said this because they work in such and such a place. And, you know, there will be a lot of people who get fearful and believe that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it is difficult. I mean, I think it's great that people have access to more information, but the truth isn't always out there, and you need to look. If people are looking things up, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. You have to go back and look to where the original source of those data are.
Nick, we're still going through the Liverpool mass testing programme. I had a test a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to get another one later on. I had the drive-through one a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to have I'm going to try the fast flow one a little bit later on, a little walk-in one later on. I mean, Liverpool has been held up as a city, and the people of the city have been held up. And even the Prime Minister has mentioned this and said they've been a great beacon of light, you know, for the rest of the nation with this testing programme. Do you feel that?
Again, I think it's fantastic. I think we should all hold our heads up proud, and you're setting a good example. This has been a wonderful test of principle, we've all said this is what we need, rapid access to rapid tests for test and trace. And this has shown up. I saw the figures from the press, I have to admit, 700 people detected who have no symptoms at all. Those people will be infectious to others, and now they know they can isolate and not spread infection. This is how to interrupt a pandemic. So Liverpool is benefiting immediately, but also we're showing that the tests that we are introducing here work in a British population, and that's going to be a principle that works throughout the UK and, of course, throughout Europe and elsewhere. So I think it's fabulous.
When we're through this, just finally, and we will get through, and we've been saying we'll get through it since April, but, you know, we have to, you know, as a nation, but we will change. We'll change in our behaviour, in what we do. We'll just carry a mask in our rucksack, or in your car, you've got a little bit of hand gel, even when COVID is, you know, hopefully a distant memory. I mean, that can only be a good thing, because as a nation, we're washing our hands more. We're giving each other a little bit more space, you know, without even thinking about it now. You know, I mean, that And that's putting a bit of a dent into to other viruses too, like the flu virus. You know, I mean, it's just, a virus is a virus. It's contact, isn't it? So if we're doing that, that can only be a good thing.
Absolutely. And in, for example, in Australia this year, they had their flu epidemic 6 months before us, and they hardly had any at all because of the precautions. And hopefully we will all learn a bit from this and in future make ourselves less likely to get all kinds of respiratory infections, common colds, as well as more nasty things like flu and coronaviruses.
I'm going to leave it there, Nick. What was it like to come on and not be Dr. Doom and Gloom, as you called yourself earlier on?
It's great. It's fabulous. And let's hope all that good news continues. And thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're always welcome. Thanks very much indeed. There's Dr. Nick Beeching from the School of Tropical Medicine. He's a senior lecturer in clinical infectious diseases from the school there as well. It's good to have him on the programme.